Did you try to be faithful and honourable to your wife?
From Paris, the Diana Princess of Wales has been killed in a car accident.
You believe there was a conspiracy?
Dodi and Diana being murdered.
Every single time I hear a click, every single time I see a flash, it takes me straight back.
I didn't like myself. I was ashamed.
Let's get into it. Hey guys, before we continue our episode, let's talk about something that can revolutionize your business, Shopify. Shopify is a global commerce platform that supports you at every stage of your business journey. Whether you're selling sleuthing supplies or marketing mystery merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. With their all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, you can reach customers wherever they are. If you want to take your business to the next level, then sign up for a $1 per month trial period at Shopify. Shopify.com/Sloan. That's Shopify.com/Sloan. Thank you for listening, Shopify. Thank you for sponsoring and enjoy this episode.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now, all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's Angie.com.
Welcome back to the Let's Get Into It podcast. We're going to be talking about the royal family, in particular, Princess Diana, what she had gone through while being a royal, how she even got in that position in the first place, how toxic her marriage was, the accident that took her life, and the conspiracies that try to explain what happened to the beloved Princess Diana. Born July 1st, 1961, Diana Spencer was the daughter of Edward John Spencer and Frances Ruth Burke Roche. As a child, she was shy but developed a love for music and dance. She had an aristocratic upbringing, becoming Lady Diana after her father inherited the title of Earl Spencer in 1975. So she was in the royal scene, and it would make sense that eventually she would go on to date someone in that family. Now, Diana met Prince Charles in 1977. And she actually met him because he was dating her older sister, Sarah. Although he's 13 years older than her, he took interest in her as a potential bride. Charles was usually the subject of media attention, and his courtship of Diana was no exception. We talked about the British tabloids before in my podcast episode about Prince Harry and Meghan Markle, and they can be brutal. I mean, they can be total savages, and they are really invested in the royal family, so when he started going off with Diana, everybody was talking about it. The press and the public were fascinated by this seemingly odd couple, the reserved, garden-loving prince and the shy young woman with an interest in fashion and popular culture. Now, Charles and Diana had only been dating for a few months when he proposed to her. So she was surprised when he asked her to marry her because she initially thought it was a joke. She was not prepared to go off and marry this man, but he was ready. Now, Prince Charles and Diana made headlines during a television interview following their engagement when Charles was asked if they were in love. Diane responded, "Of course," while Charles added, "Whatever in love means," adding the phrase, "In love is open to your own interpretation." Kind of a red flag to see from a couple who had just gotten engaged. I mean, he's saying, you know, like, "I guess we're in love, whatever love means." I mean, I would be so offended if I were her. And you guys can tell by her expression that she was hurt in that moment, and there was no hiding it. So pay close attention.
Normally, the clip cuts when he says whatever in love means.
But in this recently unearthed extended clip, you can see the full force of Diana's reaction.
Whatever in love means.
I mean, you guys can tell the expression on her face in that moment. She realized that she just signed up for a marriage with a man that wasn't going to have that unconditional love that she probably hoped was currently in their relationship, but it was a little bit too late.
I've never seen her show so clearly her dissatisfaction with him on camera before. It's a most remarkable piece of footage.
The silence between the two of them hangs terribly heavily.
You can actually see the light go out behind her eyes. She felt almost her world collapse.
So that was incredibly awkward, and the entire world witnessed it. Those interviews were back in 1992. Diana claimed that she had met Charles only 13 times before they became engaged. 13 times. Diana eventually moved up the road to Buckingham Palace, where she was given a relatively small suite of rooms on a nursery floor. Now, Diana claims this was a depressing experience for her. She quickly began to feel bored, lonely, and isolated. She spent most of her time alone, as Charles was often away and his family paid her very little attention, assuming that she would quickly adapt to their ways and not realizing that she was in desperate need of guidance and support. She, like, became engaged to this man after, you know, several handfuls of times meeting him. I don't think they had extended periods of time together before getting engaged, and now she's got royal family responsibilities without really understanding what that entails, which it seems really lonely. Now, I want to introduce you guys to someone named Camilla. She's actually Queen Camilla, and she's currently married to Prince Charles, but she's been around ever since Diana was in the picture. Now, Camilla ran in the same inner circle as Prince Charles and Princess Diana. It actually turns out later on that there is an affair, but I don't want to get too ahead of everything. Granted, Diana knew that Camilla was a threat, and even right before their wedding, her, you know, soon-to-be husband was doing some sketchy things with this Camilla. I mean, if you want to go and be with Camilla, then go and be with Camilla. That's pretty much what Diana said, because she found out that Prince Charles was planning a private lunch to say goodbye to Camilla 2 days before their wedding. Diana became so upset that she threatened to call off the wedding. And even though Diana wanted to cancel, she knew she couldn't, because even her sister told her, "Your face is on the tea towels. Like, this is your wedding. It is done. It is a production." But it's kind of gross that her man wanted to have, you know, one last rodeo with the girl that he had been interested in before he got married. There was a lot of stress that Diana was going through, and months before her wedding, she was struggling with bulimia, which is an eating disorder, and a lot of it had to deal with the pressures of her new position in the royal family. It also stemmed from the unease she felt about the relationship between her fiancé and Camilla. Princess Diana would later open up about her depression and disorders in a famous BBC interview. Her honesty captured the hearts of everyone across the world, and that's why people love Princess Diana so much, because she's relatable and she's human. The royal family tries to act like they're anything but human, but sometimes that's a strain.
When no one listens to you, or you feel no one's listening to you, all sorts of things start to happen. For instance, you have so much pain inside yourself that you try and hurt yourself on the outside because you want help. So, I did inflict upon myself. I didn't like myself. I was ashamed because I couldn't cope with the pressures.
I feel like nowadays, watching this interview, we're like, hell yeah, speak your truth. But back then, this did not happen, especially when it came to someone involved in the royal family. It's just not up to code. It's so against what the, you know, the king and the queen would want for their family. So Princess Diana really went out on a limb by going out and sharing what she had been going through with her mental health, and really starting the trajectory of this new age that we're living in, where people do respect what mental health means.
You fill your stomach up 4 or 5 times a day, some do it more, and it gives you a feeling of comfort. It's like having a pair of arms around you, but it's temporary. Then you're disgusted at the bloatedness of your stomach, and then you bring it all up again.
Even though Princess Diana saw all the red flags, she couldn't help but to go through with this wedding because it seemed like all the cards were laid out and she really had no other choice. The royal ceremony was broadcasted on television around the world. Nearly 1 billion people from 74 different countries tuned in.
A kiss, which receives a roar of approval from the crowd, who called the couple back and back again onto the balcony.
Now, Princess Diana and Prince Charles had two sons together, Prince William and Prince Harry. In January 1982, Diana shared that 12 weeks into her pregnancy with William, she deliberately threw herself down the stairs at one of the royal homes because she was feeling so despondent and inadequate in her marriage to Charles. So she was trying to harm the future prince and herself because she was so unhappy in her marriage and they were just on their first child. So right away, this marriage was destined to fail. What's up, guys? Before we dive into our episode, let's talk about something that can revolutionize your business, Shopify. Shopify is a global commerce platform that supports you at every stage of your business journey. From launching your online shop to hitting your first million orders, Shopify's got your back. Whether you're selling sleuthing supplies or marketing mystery merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. With their all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, you can reach customers wherever they are. But here's the real magic. Shopify's checkout converts up to 36% better than other platforms, turning browsers into buyers with ease. Plus, their AI-powered all-star Shopify Magic helps you sell more with less effort. And did you know that Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S.? It's the force behind brands like Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs worldwide. If you want to take your business to the next level, then sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/Sloan. That's shopify.com/Sloan. Thank you for listening, Shopify. Thank you for sponsoring and enjoy this episode.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's Angie.com.
Diana experienced postpartum depression after her pregnancy with William and found the intense media attention surrounding her pregnancy difficult to bear. In 1983, William was 9 months old, and Diana could not bear to part with him during a planned 6-week tour of Australia and New Zealand, so she broke royal tradition and brought the baby along with her. Although the decision drew some criticism, the appearance of Diana and the baby on tour was largely applauded by the public, and honestly, it sounds like a sleigh.
Then I was unwell with postnatal depression, which no one ever discusses postnatal depression. You have to read about it afterwards. And that in itself was a bit of a difficult time.
And it is right. We don't talk about postnatal depression. Maybe we do nowadays a little bit more. I mean, you know, social media has completely changed what we consume. But back then, it was not a topic we discussed. And it's something that is very real for mothers who give birth and they're not mentally doing great after. And there's a condition for it. And we need to learn about what that means.
You'd wake up in the morning feeling you didn't want to get out of bed. You felt misunderstood and just very, very low in yourself.
What was the family's reaction to your postnatal depression?
Well, maybe I was the first person ever to be in this family who ever had a depression or was ever openly tearful. And obviously that was daunting because if you've never seen it before, how do you support it?
Now, I do think Diana's being a little bit shady here, but I also think she's being straight up honest. I mean, I think that the royal family probably does act like they don't have any mental health issues. They probably do have some narcissistic tendencies. I mean, they think that they are elite royal people chosen by God. Really? No disrespect to, you know, the UK and their traditions and what they believe in, but, you know, at the same time, we're all just people, and that's what Diana is showing us.
What effect did the depression have on your marriage?
Well, it gave everybody a wonderful new label. It's Diana's unstable and Diana's mentally imbalanced. And unfortunately, that seems to have stuck on and off over the years.
Diana said her relationship with Prince Charles was the closest we've ever been during her pregnancy with Harry. Charles had hoped their second child would be a girl, but when Diana learned that it would be a boy, she kept it from Prince Charles so that they would keep this like kind of honeymoon phase going, because Charles was so happy that she was pregnant, thinking that she was going to have a girl. When Harry was born, Prince Charles' first words were, "Oh God, it's a boy," and Diana was so hurt. She said in that moment, she knew their marriage had gone down the drain.
Even before the wedding, Diana had serious doubts, and so did Charles. Charles's friends, his close friends, warned him, "This is not going to work, Charles. She's too young, she's too naive, and, you know, you're an imaginary prince. She doesn't know you at all."
As the boys got older, their children, and became like her counselors and friends as sons, she began to enjoy life a lot more. Diana was very protective of William and Harry. If you ever criticized the boys, she would be on you like a tigress. She was the only one who could criticize those two. Of course, she indulged them. She wanted to be a full hands-on parent herself. Now, Princess Diana's marriage to Prince Charles did not last for long, as we will learn, but I want to remind you guys of how powerful she was during her time in the royal family. Diana used her position and power to help people around the world. She was known as the People's Princess. Princess Diana passionately fought for the ban of landmines, advocating for the ban and raising awareness about the devastating impact of landmines on communities. She also worked tirelessly for HIV and AIDS awareness, challenging the stigma by visiting AIDS patients in the hospitals and shaking hands with them, which is so important, especially to my community, because my uncle died of AIDS before I was born. I'm obviously a gay man, so what she did truly changed the trajectory of like where we are now as far as HIV protection.
Inside, the two women met informally with three of the patients. The princess, as usual, keen to show that HIV sufferers are not dangerous to be near and how much they value human contact.
Princess Diana helped the young and homeless by becoming a patron of Centerpoint, an organization aiding homeless youth. She advocated for leprosy awareness, breaking the stigma by visiting leprosy patients in hospitals, sitting with them, shaking their hands, and emphasizing the importance of treating them with dignity and love. Princess Diana was not afraid to speak her mind or break protocol, often showing affection to her children in public and engaging with people without gloves or hats to connect on a personal level. And when you are part of the royal family, there are a lot of rules and a lot of protocol to follow, but that was something that Princess Diana constantly laughed off. I don't know if this is something that Prince Charles liked about her, because he didn't really like try to stop it, but it's something that she definitely thrived on, and I think that she wasn't going to accept the norms of the royal family, the norms that at least did not seem right. Now let's get into how Princess Diana and Prince Charles fell apart, because it's all his fault. So Prince Charles decided to hit up Camilla and see if she was interested in an affair. And of course, she was. So around 1978 through 1979, Camilla's husband was said to be fully aware of what was happening between Camilla and Prince Charles. Now, despite his relationship with Camilla, Prince Charles began hitting on Princess Diana in 1980. Though Prince Charles was dating Diana, he and Camilla were still quite close. Camilla and Diana were actually spotted attending one of Charles' events back in 1980. So Vince, he's back in kind of being tagged along until he decided who was going to be the winner, which he ended up like
marrying both at the end, which is weird to think about.
Prince Charles and Camilla reportedly began seeing one another again in 1986, despite both of them being married with children. In recordings she made for author Andrew Morton's book, Diana, Her True Story, Princess Diana recalled calling Camilla out for her affair with Charles. In January 1993, audio recordings of Prince Charles and Camilla were leaked, and the transcripts were published in the British tabloid. The audio included both raunchy innuendos and outright declarations of love. Ooh, juicy. Quote, I'll just live inside your trousers or something. It would be much easier, Prince Charles said. Camilla responded, what are you going to turn into, a pair of undies? Oh, you're going to come back as a pair of undies, they laugh. Or for God bid, a Tampax, just my luck, Prince Charles said. Oh, wow. He wants to come back as her undies. He wants to come back as her tampon. He wants to be all up in her cooter, it sounds like. Prince Charles is a nasty man. Camilla laughed at the notion. You are a complete idiot. Oh, what a wonderful idea. Ooh. When it was published in the media, a bunch of tabloids called it the most explicit and embarrassing phone call to ever be leaked. Now, him cheating on his wife with Camilla really hurt his reputation. So Prince Charles allowed a documentary filmmaker to follow him for a year and a half in hopes of repairing the damage to his reputation caused by the stories of his adultery. But when this documentary comes out, it has the opposite effect and people do not like him.
Did you try to be faithful and honorable to your wife when you took on the vow of marriage?
Yes, absolutely.
And you were?
Yes, until it became irretrievably broken down.
So Diana's separation from Charles was announced in December 1992 by the British Prime Minister. He read a statement from the royal family to the House of Commons.
It is announced from Buckingham Palace that with regret, the Prince and Princess of Wales have decided to separate.
So in 1996, their divorce was finalized, and Diana was allowed to keep her apartment at Kensington Palace. She was provided access to jets used by the royal family. Prince Charles was no longer responsible for her bills, so she didn't have that royal family money, but she did have access to a lot of the benefits. It seemed like the royal family didn't mind Princess Diana post-divorce, because Queen Elizabeth II was reportedly willing to let her keep the title, but Prince Charles adamantly insisted that she loses her royal title. So she had to give up her position at the British throne, which I think she was happy to, you know, relieve. Like, she didn't want to be a part of this family anymore. Let's talk about Princess Diana's life after divorce. She had several romantic relationships after divorcing Prince Charles. She dated the British Pakistani heart surgeon Hasnat Khan, who has been described as the love of her life from 1955 to 1997. But in 1997, she dated an Egyptian film producer and playboy, Dodi Fayed, in 1997. And it was reported that some members of the royal family and former Prime Minister Tony Blair did not approve of the relationship that Diana and Dodi had. Now, Diana actually met Dodi for the first time back in 1986 at a polo match, in which he competed against her then-husband, Prince Charles. They did not reconnect until 11 years later, when Princess Diana was now single. Prior to reconnecting with Princess Diana, the producer was reportedly engaged to a model, but then the engagement was called off. And Dodi actually called off the engagement because Princess Diana essentially slid in his DMs. Princess Diana was going on vacations with these men. She was dating around. She wasn't actually even really exclusive with anyone, and people were just following her to see who she was dating next, who she was going to be seen yachting with all day in, you know, the south of France. And while life seemed okay and the divorce went through and, you know, Diana was living, there was a moment where an accident took this all away and Diana's future was erased. Now, Dodi and Diana were going to go on a date around 9:30 p.m., but due to paparazzi attention, they ended up back at the Ritz. They tried to eat at another restaurant, but then 10 minutes later, they went in to dine in an imperial suite. Diana reportedly ordered an appetizer of mushrooms and asparagus, and then the sole. Shortly after midnight, they decided to leave the hotel to go to Dodi's apartment. Henry Paul, the head of the Ritz security, drove them in a Mercedes car. They left around 12:20 a.m. through the back entrance of the hotel. Though they had a attempted to decoy the car at the Ritz, paparazzi quickly picked up their trail. In the car, neither Princess Diana nor Dodi were wearing their seatbelts. Now, I want to carefully break down how this accident went down because there are so many conspiracies around it. So here is a clip where we walk through where the car was and how it ended up in an accident.
The car enters the tunnel at around 100 miles per hour. The last thing bystanders see before they hear a sound that will haunt their dreams is a black blur disappearing into the maw of the underpass. There's a slight dip in the roadway as the lane swerves to the right and then back to the left. The car clips a concrete pillar and Paul loses control. The sound of tires screaming as they lock up from Paul slamming on the brakes and skidding across the tunnel roadway can be heard from the outside. This is followed by a gut-wrenching crash that sounds like an explosion as the front of the Mercedes slams into a pillar, ricochets across the tunnel, flipping at least once, hits the far wall, and slowly comes to a stop in the middle of the road, facing the direction from which the car originally entered.
So around 12:25 a.m., 5 minutes after they left the hotel, the car was traveling in a tunnel at dangerously high speed. Seconds after the car enters the tunnel in the left westbound lane, it goes out of control, striking the 13th concrete pillar dividing the tunnel, rolls over and rebounds into the right wall, and then it spins around. When the car stops, it's facing east in the direction it came from. So completely like a 180. Though the posted speed limit was 30 miles per hour, the driver was reportedly driving at 70 miles per hour. 2 minutes after the accident, firefighters received a call for help and police and firefighters were there at 12:40. When they arrived, both the driver, Henry Paul, and Dodi were pronounced dead at the scene. Witness later testified that paparazzi continued taking photos and seven photographers were taken into police custody at the scene for taking these horrific pictures of these people who have just been brutalized. At the same time as the crash, a French doctor named Dr. Frederick was driving through the tunnel. He witnessed the crash and quickly rushed to the scene. He walked towards the wreckage. He opened the door and he looked inside and he recalled that there are four people. Two were apparently dead, no reaction, no breathing, and two others on the right side were living, but in severe condition. The front passenger was screaming. He was breathing. He could wait a few minutes. The female passenger, the young lady, was on her knees on the floor of the Mercedes. She had her head down and she was having a difficult time breathing. She needed quick assistance. He ran into his car. He called emergency services and he grabbed a respiratory bag. She was unconscious. Thanks to his respiratory bag, she regained a little bit more energy, but she couldn't say anything. A firefighter who reportedly was on the scene said that Diana's last words were, "My God, what's happened?" When Princess Diana was extracted from the wreckage of the car, she went into cardiac arrest. First responders performed CPR and then got her into a hospital. Princess Diana was declared dead around 4 a.m. in Paris on August 31st, 1997, at the age of 36.
We have reports from Paris that Diana, Princess of Wales, has been killed in a car accident and that her partner, Dodi Fayed, has also been killed. They were apparently being pursued by paparazzi on two motorcycles.
Of course, this is international news. I mean, someone who was part of the royal family has been killed. So everyone's talking about it and everybody's shocked because, I mean, car accidents happen every day. But, I mean, someone like Princess Diana, she should be in the hands of someone who's a little bit more safe. Even though the doctor tried his best to fix her wounds, to close up that tear that was in her lung, and to make sure her heart was running, there was really nothing else he could do, and her body had given up. He said, "Her specific injury is so rare that in my entire career, I don't believe I've seen another." He believes that Diana's death could have been prevented by one small change, a seatbelt. Had she been restrained, she probably would have appeared in the public 2 days later with a black eye, perhaps a bit breathless from the fractured ribs and a broken arm, but she would have been alive. That's why wearing your seatbelt is so important. If you do not wear your seatbelt, you better start. Later that day, when Princess Diana had died, then Prince Charles flew to Paris with Diana's sisters. They brought her body home and there was a funeral held on September 6, 1997. It's unfortunate that Princess Diana had died and I wish I had got to have seen her do her thing in my lifetime. But we hadn't, and it's sad. And a lot of people can't come to terms with why she had died. So let's talk a little bit about those conspiracies. let's start off by talking about Operation Paget. Now, what caused this driver, Henry Paul, the acting head security at the Ritz Hotel, and a licensed driver to drastically lose control of the car? According to a statement from French authorities given the Monday after the crash, Henry Paul's blood exceeded the legal blood alcohol limit. He had reportedly been drinking and driving recklessly. Testing also found that he had some prescription drugs in his system, including some SSRIs, which should not be mixed with alcohol. So really, he was screwed up, messed up on drugs, on alcohol, and driving one of the most important people in the world. It was found that the driver's alcohol level were 3 times over the allowed limit. So the question is, why was this drunk man named the person responsible for Princess Diana?
3 days after the funeral, the French investigators uncover that Henri Paul had also been on antidepressants. Both Prozac and Tiapridol were found in his system, which might have suggested he was taking medication for alcohol withdrawals. It's also concluded that the mixing of antidepressants and alcohol likely severely impaired Paul's judgment that night.
For some people, what happened that night wasn't simply a tragic accident. Instead, it was a result of some kind of conspiracy conducted secretly by agents of the British state or something else, so they claim. Let's explore it. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but let's explore it. The conspiracies have been so convincing and so widespread, helped by the Daily Express and Egyptian businessman Mohammed, that Met police were forced to launch Operation Paget, an inquiry to establish whether there was any truth in the theories. It lasted years and cost millions of pounds, and found that the theories were entirely without foundation. And all that happened that night was an incredibly unfortunate accident.
You believe there was a conspiracy to
definitely
kill Dodi?
They been murdered. Dodi and Diana been murdered, definitely. I am the father who knows everything, who follow up everything, who see things, because I am the one who been hit by the tragedy.
Who would want them dead? And why would anyone want to kill them, Dodi and Diana?
Because they still don't accept that Dodi, my son, an Egyptian, a Muslim, can be the stepfather of the future king.
Now, Mohammed has an interesting take. I mean, of course he has stakes in this because his son, Dodi, was killed and was dating Princess Diana. But he says this was political and religious, that Dodi and Diana, they were going to be together, and that eventually Prince William would become king, and that if Dodi, a Muslim man, was like a, you know, the stepfather to a king, the King of England, that they would not allow that to happen, and that breaking that type of traditional norm was too much. So they set up Diana and Dodi for death. So in 2004, the British Metropolitan Police launched an investigation into the rumors that were pushed by Mohammed. The police examined 175 theories about what had happened that night, and some of them were small and some of them were profound. But it was found that none of them were true, according to the police that are, you know, paid for by the government. Costing millions of dollars, about 3.6 million pounds, and spanning the course of 3 years, the project included 14 investigators who interviewed 300 witnesses, including members of the royal family like Prince William and then Prince Charles, and compiled more than 600 pieces of evidence, as well as re-examining testimony and evidence from previous French inquiries. One of the reasons why Mohammed believes his son Dodi and Dodi's girlfriend Princess Diana were targeted was because Princess Diana was pregnant. According to Mohammed, the reason for the killing was that Diana had become pregnant with his son's child, and he believes the British government would not accept that she would have a child with a Muslim man. Mohammed said discussion of a potential pregnancy came up even before Diana died. During a holiday in France a few weeks before, some newspapers speculated that she might be pregnant, and that speculation was buoyed up by mysterious comments that Diana had made about a big surprise. But when it comes to the autopsy, there was no sign of pregnancy. So her blood said there was no sign of pregnancy. There was no evidence that she may have been pregnant.
The Princess of Wales was not pregnant at the time of her death. Our conclusions were strengthened by forensic tests carried out on blood recovered from the Mercedes car when we brought it back to this country.
Now, some people believe that Diana kind of saw this coming if the government had been going after her. Diana believed that she was going to be killed by the establishment. The main motivating factor behind the conspiracies is the belief that Diana factor behind the conspiracy is going to be killed, and that much it appears to be true. Diana wrote a letter to her butler saying, "I am sitting here at my desk today in October, longing for someone to hug me and encourage me to keep strong and to hold my head high. This particular phase of my life is the most dangerous. It is planning an accident in my car, brake failure, a serious head injury in order to make the path clear for Charles to marry." Now, she doesn't say who is planning this, but she clearly says, "Blank is planning an accident in my car, brake failure, or a serious head injury, because Prince Charles wants to marry and Diana is in the way of this." Other people claim that Diana's medical care was deliberately sabotaged. Conspiracy theorists believe that doctors allowed Diana to die on purpose by not treating her in the proper way. Most of this revolves around her treatment at the scene of the crash. If she had instead been taken to the nearest hospital and treated there, she may have survived. Part of the belief in this theory comes from the fact that the French approach to emergency care is simply different than the UK. In France, emergency crews focus on giving treatment at the scene before moving a person to the hospital. But in the UK, and I believe at the US, it's about moving someone to the hospital as fast as possible. So there may be some cultural differences, and it wasn't a sabotage, but, you know, Diana probably would have benefited from going straight to a hospital, opposed to getting to a hospital like 2 hours after the accident, which I believe that's how long it took.
The ambulance did not go to the nearest hospital, but to La Petite Salpêtrière, still a distance of less than 3 miles. It was 1 hour and 43 minutes after the accident when Diana got to hospital. Every inquiry has rejected suggestions that this was part of a conspiracy. Normal practice in France is for paramedics to try to stabilize and treat victims at the scene. By the time Diana got to the operating theatre, she was in a desperate state.
As the writers of the Operation Paget report note, such a conspiracy would require a substantial number of expert doctors and other caregivers to both break their ethics and then lie about doing so. So they conclude that this, you know, setup of her not going to the hospital right away could not have happened. Another popular conspiracy around Princess Diana's death is that the paparazzi were responsible for killing her on purpose.
The Paris police found fragments of the rear light of a white Fiat Uno in the tunnel.
The Mercedes wing mirror was found at this point, with traces of another car's paintwork and shards of a Fiat taillight. The Mercedes was thrown into the right-hand wall, then hurled across into the 13th pillar in the middle of the tunnel.
The French police examined 4,668 vehicles, but did not find any Fiat Uno which had been damaged in this way. Al-Fayed hired a team of senior retired French policemen, and they claimed to have solved the mystery. In a field, they found this Fiat. Its taillight had just been replaced, and it belonged to a man who had spent the summer photographing Dodi and Diana, James Andanson. He was one of the most famous paparazzis in the world. Andanson told people he was in the tunnel on the night of the crash. A footnote to all this is that Andanson died later in 2000 after setting fire to himself in his own car in a deserted woodland. Lord Stevens added, "There is no evidence whatsoever that he was murdered."
That's a little concerning. This man just ended up burning himself to death in his car in the middle of the woods, and he did it to himself. I wonder what type of guilt he was living with. But ultimately, the 800-page findings of this operation echoed that the conclusions made by the French authorities that the crash was due to a drunk driver is in fact true, that she was not set up for death by the government, but in fact, this drunk driver made a poor choice and killed an important person. Now, Mohammed, Dodi's father, said the results were garbage, saying, "I'm certain 100% that the leading member of the royal family has planned that, and the whole plot was executed on his order with the help of members of the government." In 2008, there was a separate investigation where the coroner's office did determine that the paparazzis played a role in Dodi and Diana's death, which I would say, now it's on paper and it's confirmed that they did play a role, but there really is no jurisdiction where these paparazzis could be held accountable. Now, of course, a death affects a lot of people, especially when it's a famous person like Princess Diana. Her children also had a lot to go through, realizing that their mother was no longer going to be there for them, because Diana was kind of a pillar in the royal family. She was normal. People liked her. She was the people's princess, and she really provided some stability for her sons. (Clears throat) After the accident, Prince William and Prince Harry were shielded from the public, and the brothers have only recently began to open up about how this devastating loss affected them. Prince Harry said, quote, "I really regret not ever talking about it. For the first 28 years of my life, I never talked about it. It's okay to suffer, but as long as you talk about it, it's not weakness. Weakness is having a problem and not recognizing it and not solving that problem.
I didn't have anyone to turn to. The family, I didn't very much have this mentality of this is just how it is.
Pain that is not transformed ends up coming out in all sorts of different ways. I was willing to drink. I was willing to take drugs. I was willing to try and do the things that made me feel less like I was feeling.
I would probably drink a week's worth in one day on a Friday or a Saturday night.
3 days after Princess Diana was laid to rest, the Queen put out a statement saying, "We have all felt those emotions these last few days. So what I say to you now as your Queen and as your grandmother, I say from the heart. First, I want to pay tribute to Diana myself. She was an exceptional and gifted human being in good times and bad. She never lost her capacity to smile and to laugh. I admire and respect her for her energy and commitment to others, especially for her devotion to her two boys."
I was so angry with what happened to her and the fact that there was no justice at all. She was very much still alive on the back seat. And those people that caused the accident, instead of helping, we're taking photographs of her dying on the back seat. Every single time I hear a click, every single time I see a flash, it takes me straight back.
It's really interesting to hear how Prince Harry reflects on this, because he feels like there hasn't been justice, which is how most people do feel. I mean, the driver, if he's at fault, then, you know, I mean, he's dead, so there's no justice there. The paparazzis, we can't really hold them accountable. The people who are supposed to be responding, it seems like Harry believes that they did not act in good faith. So really, he has to live with this, and there is no real way for him to get to the bottom of it. Harry said, "My mother had just died, and I had to walk a long way behind her coffin, surrounded by thousands of people watching me while millions more did on television. I don't think any child should be asked to do that under any circumstances. I don't think it would happen today." Harry said that he was outside his body during her funeral, so he was dissociating. He said, "The thing I remember the most was the sound of the horse's hooves going along the pavement, along the mall, the brick road. It was like I was outside my body and just walking along, doing what was expected of me, showing one-tenth of the emotion that everyone else was showing. And this was my mom. You never even met her." So he's over here, numb, walking down past his mother's coffin while everyone around him is sobbing, and he can't feel a thing because he's not allowed to, because he's got to do everything else that a little boy probably shouldn't do when his mom had just died. Diana's brother, Lord Spencer, blamed the media for the crash and called his sister the most hunted person of the modern age. Now, Harry has spoken more about Diana's death and the impact it's had on him more than his brother, and it does seem like it really has shaped him as a man, and probably why he has left his role at the royal family, why he acts a certain way when it comes to his own children. And you've got to admit, I mean, on a human level, these type of traumatic events, they affect you for the rest of your lives. So this behavior, his way of coping, it makes sense to me.
And when Harry became a new dad, he was desperate to protect his son. So he reached out to Charles one last time.
Meghan Markle and baby Archie, favorite targets of ruthless media. What will the royal family do?
What I was seeing was history repeating itself. My father, he stopped taking my calls. I feel really let down. And Archie's his grandson.
And when Charles didn't step up, Harry had only one choice to help Archie.
Isn't this all about breaking the cycle? That whatever pain and suffering has happened to you that you don't pass on?
That was one of the biggest reasons to leave.
So Prince Harry's decision to leave the royal family was inspired by his mother, her bravery to challenge the traditions and to break the cycle. And he didn't want his son or his wife to live through that. So, I mean, that is a lot of strength. You've got to give them that. Both William and Harry have honored Diana through their daughter's names. Princess Charlotte Elliot Diana was born on May 2nd, 2015 by William and his wife Kate, and Harry and his wife Meghan Markle welcomed their daughter Princess Lilibet Diana Mountbatten Windsor. Woo, that's a mouthful. In June 2021. Princess Diana will forever live on. She's someone who I'm aware of. I understand how impactful she was, how she challenged the royal family, and how she changed the world. And I think it's important that we all understand a little bit more about her and how her life was taken, because there are a lot of celebrities who are put in compromising situations by paparazzis and by those trying to, you know, get a picture or to get a story, and it's not okay. You know, we had to watch Prince Harry and Prince William grow up without a mother, and that's never acceptable. But I want to hear what you guys think of this podcast episode in the comments below. Let me know what you want me to talk about in our next deep dive. Until next time, we're going to get into it next week. So subscribe. I'll see you guys very soon. Bye, guys.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish, or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.